Welcome to Sestercast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Kathy Campbell. Hey, Kathy, how's it going?
Hi, Jean. It's going absolutely fantastic.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
I feel like I say that every time, but it's really true. Like, I slept okay, woke up okay, it's been an okay day, which really, nowadays, that's pretty fantastic. So I will take it.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that's why I ask you, because you almost always say something really, really upbeat, and that makes me happy. And then I assume it makes the listeners happy,
yay,
too. You're
I hope so.
The canary in our emotional coal mine.
Yeah, if I'm having a bad day, then it's really a bad day. So I'm very glad that, for example, we moved this recording one day, because yesterday was not a fantastic day and I would have had a very different answer.
Yeah.
So it was a good change.
Yeah, I think it's important when watching this episode 7 of season 2, Orphan Black, Knowledge of Causes and Secret Motion of Things, that one has the best possible level of good mood to start off with, because, well, a lot of stuff happens in this episode, as we say every week, but again, it's true for this week.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, yes, a lot of stuff happens in this episode. There's definitely a focus, definitely a scenario that gets the most airtime and attention, and
with good reason.
And that's Allison in rehab and all the wacky stuff that happens at rehab this week.
Yeah.
This episode, I think, I call it the sequel to season 1, episode 6, Variations Under Domestication, because I think if you watched the episode with Allison trying to throw the potluck party while being drunk and having Sarah there and Felix there and Vic there, it's very similar. And I'm sure the actors, when they were told, hey, we're going to do that again, except it's going to be a rehab, the actors were like, yay.
Yeah.
Felix, of course, being a big part of this as well, because Felix and Allison are just, you know, best sestras forever. And that's a nice relationship.
Yes, I love their relationship.
Yeah. Before we jump into rehab shenanigans, let's update where we are with the other sestras, which, you know, these storylines do intersect, but I think we can safely talk about what's happening with Cosima and then Rachel, and then swing around to Allison plus Sarah at rehab family day. Sound good?
Sounds great. So the biggest mental thing for me with Cosima is how intimate the camera work tends to be with her.
Yes.
It's made her softer than I would have thought would be experiencing in season 1. Obviously she's going through these horrible health issues and these procedures that are super fun. In season 1, Cosima is very much, you know, this amazing scientist who has zero F's to give about anything and is just like, look, this is how it is, blah, 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 takes control, whatever. And it's this season has really softened her, not just because she's sick and not just because she's in a relationship, but because all of it together, and you're really getting to see more of her personal side as opposed to just the fact that she's the science monkey.
Yeah. that opening scene with Cosima in Dyad, that was very, I thought, weirdly romantic GYN procedure.
Yeah, very romantic, but and not just from the like connection that she has with Delphine, but the very zoomed in, soft focus, soft light, trying to make it seem like a softer scene when really, I mean, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt bad.
Yeah, so while all that is going on one end of the table with the stirrups, you know, at the other end, Delphine is sitting next to Cosima and holding her hand, and they're it's just so sweet and intimate. And because of the setting, it just was struck me as like, this is so weird. But maybe I have the wrong attitude about medical procedures and I should look at them as potential, you know, dates. I don't know.
I think it would take a very specific type of partner to have it be a date.
Yes, that's true. So yeah, so they're injecting the stem cells that they had discussed last week from the exfoliated baby tooth DNA, which yes. sounded so wonderful last week. And we know from the week before that Scott has been asking questions that are making Delphine uncomfortable because he's determined that the stem cells are from a relative of the clones, possibly a niece or a daughter. And that thread picks up again because Scott is wondering, why do I have to keep the source of the cells a secret from Cosima? And Delphine's like, you signed a confidentiality agreement and I'm your boss. Well, of course, Cosima's eavesdropping right there. And she comes up and she's like, hey, what's up? And so Delphine tells her the news about the baby tooth and where the stem cells came from. And Delphine actually solved a mystery that I had in my mind, which was, how did they get that baby tooth anyway? They got it when Kira was in an accident, as we remember the terrible accident she was in at the end of season one.
Yes.
And so some industrious Neolutionist was around, I suppose, to pick up a tooth or pay somebody to get the tooth. And boy, is Cosima mad. It's good to see her mad.
Oh, yes. Yeah, especially in contrast to the really softness that we had earlier, which I'm sure is partially why they did that. But again, she has been this hardcore science monkey for so long. So we seeing the softness and then the real anger, like rage, that it seems even more dramatic because of the softness that we had before, especially because she's so angry at Delphine with legitimate good reason. Especially because Delphine doesn't quite understand the bond that the Sestras have with each other.
Right.
And the fact that Kira is not just Sarah's child.
Right.
And the whole argument was completely understandable. And I felt so bad for Cosima, especially when she was calling to talk to Sarah, because obviously Cosima feels guilt.
Yeah.
Because this came, she's getting better because of Kira.
Yeah.
Because of things that were stolen from Kira.
Yeah.
And it just she didn't want to tell anybody she was sick in the first place. And now not only is she still sick and they know, but she feels like a traitor as traitor auntie or whatever.
That's right. And so the next time we see Cosima, she's calling, as you say, Sarah, and they don't show it directly, but I take it that Cosima said she needs another tooth from Kira, and Sarah and Cal.
So yeah, I think
Super Cal.
I think Delphine mentioned something about they used it all up.
Yeah,
or something.
That's right. She said that's a limited resource or something like that. Yeah.
Yes.
And so Sarah and Cal, who we love so much because he's just so adorable as a boyfriend.
And he cares and he's so smart and he takes such good care of Kira and obviously Kira's his daughter legitimately, but he's changed his entire life to take care of Kira.
Yeah.
And not just to take care of her, but to teach her things she knows. Mm-hmm. Like the time when they're when he's packing her up in the car and is like, do you remember the number? And like, he's making sure that she has connections.
Right.
And has the things that she needs to survive as much as possible. And that's, it's just,
yeah,
it's so sweet.
I mean, best dad too. I know.
I don't, yeah.
I'm like, do I want him to be for my sure. dad or my boyfriend? That sounds really weird, but.
As the people on the internet say, I believe daddy is the term that you're looking for.
Okay, whatever. Actually, I'm very satisfied with the father that I have, so I'm not really thinking about that. But boyfriend-wise, no. Well, I would have snapped Cal up back in the day. So Kira hears Cal and Sarah arguing about whether Kira should donate another tooth to Cosima or, you know, for the stem cells. And as they're arguing, the camera, you know, point of view keeps going back into the camper where Kira is tying a string to a doorknob. And we all know what that's for. Yeah. And she pulls out her own tooth. And she sort of shrieks when it happens, as you would, and they both run into the camper, and
right. She
holds up the tooth and says, will this help? And they're like, oh, you know, she said it was loose anyway, which is true. At that age, their teeth are just falling out like left and right. So,
but the fact that it hurt says that it wasn't loose enough. Yeah. And I felt, I mean, gosh, I love Kira so much.
I know.
I love her. I adore the actress. I adore the character writing. I love all of it. Love it. Love it.
So that's what's happening with Cosima and her treatment. Then to pick up from last week, where Sarah had tracked down Ethan Duncan, who is Rachel's father, the scientist who was responsible for the Lita clones and adopted one of them, Rachel, as his own daughter. Sarah's at his house, and it's gross. I don't even want to talk about it, but
oh my goodness, it's an episode of Hoarders.
Yeah, and so Sarah's trying to find something for him, and she thinks Duncan is just a nutcase. He's saying like, "No, I need this red box. Not that box. I need this box." And the Sarah's thinking, I just say we just turn him over to Leaky, like get rid of him, because she's finding it frustrating to deal with him. But eventually, a box does show up that, you know, after a whole pile of junk falls over, and he's like, that's it. And he opens it, and Siobhan is looking at it and going, that's just a bunch of other junk. So, and at that point, Sarah has to go to meet up with Cal and Kira. So it's Siobhan in charge now. And boy, Siobhan is great at being in charge. And
yes. Oh, man. Yes.
So there's a new character that shows up this week. Dr. Leaky and Paul are talking about, you know, what happened with Helena and Sarah's road trip, that the two of them were separated and that Sarah found Duncan. And at that moment, Leaky's looking through a microscope and he's going like, check this out. Synthetic amniotic fluid. We're developing an artificial womb. It's a bit of a hobby of mine. And Paul says, I like pottery. And so,
yeah, Paul has grown in such a manner that I adore him even more. Like he was good boyfriend beforehand. Like, good job. But not, he's become more than just like the hired muscle.
Yeah.
Like, he manages to slip his sarcasm in, and especially Paul and Mrs. S together.
Yes.
I just love their interactions.
Yeah. Well, cause they are like a, you know, mutual admiration for the deviousness of the other side.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
So they have, there's a kind of respect between them. But you know, Paul is wondering what he should tell Rachel about Ethan Duncan. And Leaky's just like, hey, tell her what you told me. Tell her the truth. And he seems really calm about it. But then as soon as Paul leaves, he asks on the intercom, he says, I need to meet with Marion Bowles immediately. And we're like, who is she?
I actually, like, I was very confused because I was like, did I miss an entire character?
I know. Somehow? They do kind of bring
it in.
I mean,
I've been watching these things.
Yeah.
These episodes, I've been watching them, you know, paying a lot of attention. Uh-huh. Normally, like I've said before, I watch shows, they're on while I'm working, etc. I don't pay a whole lot of attention. So if a character comes in, I'm like, wait, who is that? There is a good chance that they've been around before. And I was just like, but what? And I was searching through my notes because, of course, I can't Google it.
Right.
Because who knows what will happen in the future, learning that she was actually a completely new character was very soothing for my sanity.
That's good. Well, yes. So she comes to the office and it's Michelle Forbes, who we love. I assume you have seen her in other things, but of course my favorite is she's Ensign Ro Lauren in Star Trek, The Next Generation. And she's just she's my favorite Bajoran. She was kick-ass in that series. She shows up. I mean, she's got a huge list of things that she's appeared in and starred in, and et cetera. But another thing that I thought she was awesome in was she was in Battlestar Galactica for a couple of episodes as the admiral of the Pegasus, which was another ship that was escaping from the Cylons. So we have another Battlestar Galactica connection here on Orphan Black now that Cylon Daniel is dead. She has possibly one of the best opening lines in this series, which is saying to Leaky, oh, please tell me your hands haven't been soaking in some gruesomely fecund jelly. And
I loved that, especially because obviously she knows what Leaky enjoys doing in his time off.
Yeah, actually, we know his hobby is creating an artificial womb, so she's actually right on the money. It has been. His hands have been soaking in some gruesomely fecund jelly. So Leaky tells her that Ethan Duncan is alive and that Sarah found him, and Marion is asking him, how will Rachel react? And Leaky says, I don't know. She's, you know, until recently I would have trusted her to see the big picture, but now she takes things personally. And Marion says, well, we'll have to step in if she does that. And then she says, by the way, every time we see each other, it's almost always because of Sarah Manning. We have to look at this. So kind of implying that Sarah Manning might need to be bumped off. So we don't know who Marion is, other than she seems to be in charge of Leaky and Rachel and Dyad. So, but that's okay. You didn't miss anything, just FYI, if that's what
is very good.
You were wondering. So meanwhile, Siobhan is playing both sides against the middle with Leaky and with Rachel. And she's told Leaky, if I bring you Duncan, you have to drop all of your efforts to get Kira, and I'm taking her away. But she also makes a deal with Paul, and Paul brings Rachel over to her house to meet Ethan Duncan. And she does. So Rachel sees him, and he says, oh, my dear Rachel. And she says, hello, Father.
Yes, but the emotion, like, Rachel is showing the first emotion that we've really seen. Like, we saw hints of it when she learned that Sarah was watching the movies in her house and, like, that commotion there. Mm-hmm. But there's her eyes are watering. Her, like, lip is quivering slightly. Like, we can see that she is having a real human reaction. She's not a robot. She's not, like,
right.
Which earlier in the episode, there was some talk with Sarah not being sure if Rachel was human enough, really, whether she knew that Leaky had killed her parents or not.
Right.
And Mrs. S was like, that's why Mrs. S went to talk to Leaky too, in addition to getting backup for Kira, was also to check and see if she thought that Rachel knew about her parents. And the reaction, obviously, she did not. And it was so sweet to see that reunion. I definitely got emotional, for sure.
So while she's at the kitchen table at Siobhan's house with Ethan, and, you know, he's asking, can you forgive me? And the things you might say, parent to child after 20-year absence. Paul and Siobhan are in the living room, and Siobhan says, well, how's Dr. Leaky? And Paul says, well, I'm sure he's making his own maneuvers. And Siobhan says, this is going to force both their hands. You know, what she's going to learn today is going to force both their hands. And it did. Because Rachel's next scene is back at Dyad. She's in her office. And Leaky comes in his usual smarmy, fake, happy to see you way. And she just says, my father sends his regards. And that, of course, pulls him up short. And he says, you have to think very carefully about the next steps. And Rachel's like, what? Well, otherwise I'll die in a fire. And that was interesting. And then that, you know, she was being really straightforward, sarcastic with him. And he starts, I didn't even write anything else he said because it was all just patronizing, self-serving, blah, 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 put the past behind you stuff. And she's having none of it.
Right.
She says, it's, you know, it's already over, Rachel says. And she dials somebody on her cell phone with the speakerphone on, and it's Marion. And Marion answers the phone just saying, Rachel, is it done? And Rachel's just staring at Leaky while she's talking to Marion, saying, it's been set in motion. And Marion says, it's not an easy task. He was your mentor, but he lost his way with Sarah Manning. So let me know when it is done. Did that surprise you that Rachel had moved so fast?
Not really.
Yeah.
Because we've seen, I mean, Rachel doesn't take anything from anyone. And she, Leaky raised her and created this hard-nosed B-word of a leader to take over, you know, to be in charge, basically. He created this. It did not surprise me at all, especially because he lied to her about her father. Like, that is enough for sure for pretty much anyone to have a reaction like that, but especially for Rachel, who trusted him, who, like, all of these things lined up. Of course she's going to immediately turn around and be like, look, you're taken care of. It actually surprised me more that she gave him an out.
Yeah.
That she, like, was like, it's foolish to let you survive. You raised me. But nature prevails. And, like, that was hardcore.
Yeah. So, yeah, go now. Don't get in your car. Don't go home. You might survive. That was surprising, actually, as you say it. And, I mean, the look on Leaky's face when she hangs up that call with Marion Bowles, finally, he's afraid of somebody else. And he's like, you know, he's losing it. And I don't feel sorry for him one tiny, tiny bit.
Nope. Especially since this is what he created.
Yeah.
Like, he knows what she is capable of because he made her that way. So, yeah.
So that, he gives her probably the most awkward kiss on Orphan Black on her forehead. And, and then he's out in the street.
Cause he's scared.
Yeah. And, then he goes out to the street and he's walking away and you can see he's followed, and that scene ends. And with that,
yes,
I think we can swing back around to happy rehab place or whatever it's called. And this is really the meat of this particular episode, or the tofu, if you prefer.
Which is good, because we didn't really see Allison at all.
Yeah.
In the previous episode. So, yeah. Which I've noticed seems to be a theme, mm-hmm. Specifically with Allison. I know it happens with other characters as well, but like with Allison, she'll not show up at all in an episode, and then she gets an episode that's pretty much all about her.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't really noticed it with the other clones. So mm-hmm. It makes me wonder, is Allison difficult emotionally for Tatiana to handle as a character? Or is she just kind of the character that it's easier for them to put in a situation and then step away from?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas everyone else has these interconnections that they have to have.
Yeah. Well, Allison is a more self-contained character than the other, you know, three, let's say, in the sense that she has a home, she has a husband, she has children. Obviously, Sarah has a child, but where's the child living? In a van down by the river. She has a neighborhood. Maybe things aren't going so good with the neighborhood these days, but she has more of a life fully formed outside of what's going on with Cosima, Helena, and Sarah. So maybe that is one of the reasons that they can do a big show with her, mostly the being the focus, or that they can't just drop her into it here and there without bringing in all of that extra baggage. So sometimes they just leave her out.
Yeah, especially because, like she said in one of the first episodes in season one, she just has the money. Like, that's
mm-hmm.
that's her contribution. And so it's difficult to make it anything other than that.
Yeah.
Like, she has no purpose in the group necessarily. I mean, that's obviously a lie. Like, she has purpose. She's a Sestra, all of that. But, like, yeah.
But it is an ongoing, insecurity of Allison's, that she doesn't have anything to contribute besides money and guns. But I think that's a lot. So we're opening at rehab right after we left off from last week's episode. Allison had asked Vic to help her make crafts for the family day. So name tags, I guess. And so Allison and Vic are making these name tags, and Allison's talking about Ainsley, who always acted so superior to her, and like everything she did was better. And Vic says, "Yeah, I hate those people." And Allison says, "But she got she got what she deserved." And then she kind of stops herself, and Vic's like, "Hey, you should open up. Come on, you know." So Allison's like, "Well, I slept with her husband in a van in the parking lot." Vic's like, "That's good." So the next step is, and before he can say anything else, and she says, "And I killed her. She's choked to death, and I didn't help her." Vic says,
and she goes through everything that happened, every single step.
Yeah. Vic is like, "You mean like on a piece of chicken?" And she's like, "No, not like on a piece of chicken." And then she, as you say, she grabbed at the counter and begged for her life. And then finally, Allison's like, "Whew, it feels so good to say that out loud." I'm thinking, okay, Allison.
Yeah, and Vic's face. Yeah. Like, here's this. I mean, he's not really a hardcore bad guy, but he's been around a lot of really, like, not good people.
Uh-huh.
And his reaction, you can tell he is just surprised.
Yeah.
That this nice Allison lady, who's so different from Sarah, comes and is like telling all these things and doesn't really seem sorry about it.
Yeah. It's like, it makes me wonder, what kind of dirt did Vic think he was going to get on Allison? Because, you know, up to now, all he knows her as the straight-laced suburban crafty mom. So he is, like you say, he's pretty blown away by this revelation, and Meanwhile, Allison's just like so relieved, and she's like, "You've been so supportive. I made you something," and gives him a pair of gloves.
Oh my gosh, the
gloves! Did you love those gloves?
I loved those gloves. They were the best. Yeah. They were. And he's all, "Are these for me?" And she like wiggles it and shows the missing fingers. Mm-hmm. Like, well, yeah, of course they are. And it was, and on the one hand, you know, it's so Allison. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so Allison. Here, let me make you these gloves. And Vic's reaction, on the one hand, I doubt he's ever gotten anything homemade from anyone before. Mm-hmm. Like, I sincerely doubt that. On the other hand, this lady just talked to him about how she watched someone die.
Yeah.
And it made me laugh. It made me laugh.
Yeah. So then Vic, of course, runs to the phone to call DeAngelis and say, you know, get here tomorrow with my paperwork. I've got something big for you on Allison Hendricks. And Allison had been following him because he, air quote, forgot his gloves, and she was wanting to make sure he got them, and she just gasps and is totally shocked and had no idea that Vic was about to betray her. So of course the first thing Allison does is calls Felix and says,
right,
you know, we have a problem. And Felix says, I will be there first thing. I think she calls him in the middle of the night from the office phone, because you're not supposed to use the phone. And
right. And him waking up and is in the bedroom, yeah, was so perfect. Yeah. It crawls out the bottom of the sheets, try and get the phone. Very, very Felix. And,
yeah.
And of course he's got to take care of his Allison.
Yes. So the next morning, Allison comes to Vic and says, I need to talk to you privately, and brings him back to her room. And there's Felix, and Felix just yells at him. And, you know, Felix has a lot of practice yelling at Vic.
Yes.
And Vic says he's sorry, but, you know, he has these charges he really needs to get dropped. And so he has no choice but to rat out Allison. And he's about to leave the room, and Felix says, well, Sarah is not pleased. And Vic has to turn around and go, Sarah, is she here? So Felix knows Vic's how to push Vic's buttons for sure.
Yes. And I loved Allison's face when Felix said that, because she's trying so hard to cover up her surprise,
mm-hmm,
that Sarah was mentioned at all, because yeah, she's like, I know Sarah doesn't know what's going on. What are you doing? What's happening?
Yeah, I think follow Felix's lead is a good rule in Orphan Blackland.
Yes.
And so they call Sarah. Felix, you know, calls and says, we need your help over at rehab. And Allison gets on the phone because Sarah makes some kind of snippy comment. And Allison says, like, hey, this is all your fault. I need you to come right now and clean up your doo-doo.
I put that too.
Good Allison line.
Such a good Allison line.
The scene opens again at rehab, and now the tune, the old 60s tune, Love Is All Around, is playing, which is very funny and ironic. And
It really makes me nostalgic for Love Actually, because is, of course, the song
me too
that means a lot to, especially if you've listened to the commentary on Love Actually.
I haven't.
You need to. It's fantastic, with the director and Hugh Grant, Bill Nighy, mm-hmm, and the kid.
The little kid. I mean, the young kid who's not a kid anymore.
Yeah. Who's not a kid anymore, but he will always remain a child in my head. And it's hilarious. You have to go listen to it. But apparently that song, thanks to Four Weddings and a Funeral, I think,
mm-hmm,
was played all the flipping time on the radio.
Hmm.
And so everyone got sick of it. And so, of course, the director's like, let's put a remake and make it Christmas themed. And so hearing, I always, think of that whenever I hear this song.
Yeah, oh, me too.
So even though it has nothing to do with Christmas, it definitely was a Christmas song.
I do watch that movie every Christmas. It's my Christmas movie, and I love it. And, you know, I'll fight you if you want to disagree with me, but... Not you, Kathy, because
yes,
I know you
yes, we will
don't.
Take no hate towards... Well, yeah, we will take no hate. Don't at us. We will take no hatred towards Love Actually. Yes, I'm fully aware that there are issues. It's not a perfect movie, blah, 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 blah. But still, it's great.
Well, Orphan Black, though, is a perfect show. So they use the music, ironically, I assume. And Sarah's and Vic are in... Allison's room, and Sarah is like, okay, I'm here. What do you want? And Vic is all like serious, and he's got his 12-step notes, and he's like, I have to atone. Sarah, you are a rock in the stream of, you know, my recovery, and I have to apologize. And Sarah's like, great. Okay, I atone you. You're atoned. And Vic is like, no, that's I haven't done it yet. I haven't apologized yet. And Sarah's just like, she needs to get out of there pretty quick. And Vic is like, don't you have anything to say to me? And then she's like, oh, you want me to apologize to you? And Felix is, which one of the 12 steps is that? This is not the deal, Vic. And Vic's like, nope, we've got a new deal. He's just, you know, arguing with Sarah. He's like, you always do this. You always think you're better than me. You don't let me in. Felix says, like, well, no wonder with those banana hands of yours. And right. Sarah's looking at him like, not helping, not helping. Right. And Vic says, for the love of Buddha, will you keep out of this to Felix? And Sarah's like, I apologize, really. We were two train wrecks. And that was a pretty nice thing to say.
Yeah.
But then Vic says, like, I want you back, though. And Sarah's like, no way. And I think one of my favorite phrases from this particular episode, Vic says, don't tell me Nail Gun Ken is still in the picture. Like, Nail Gun Ken. That's what I'm calling him from now on.
I love it.
And Felix, being ever helpful, says, no, but you should see the new one.
And right.
Felix, you're not helping.
He very much did not help because Vic starts getting this kind of weird look on his face, and it cuts to the cup of tea on the glitter table, and you're just like, oh no, Felix, what did you do? And Vic manages to turn and fall face first onto the table of... like crafting supplies,
right.
And it just looks so painful. And Sarah's like, what in the hell just happened? And Felix, being Felix, I may have spiked his tea. And I'm just like, oh, Felix, you thought you were helping, but now you have an unconscious body. Like,
yeah, Felix is
covered in glitter. Yeah.
He looks like he was molested by elves.
Yes. Oh, it was so funny.
And then there's a knock on the door. Felix hides and with Vic, like, you know, drags his body over, you know, behind the bed. And Sarah transitions real awkwardly to Allison mode. Like she kind of even warms up her voice with a high-pitched squeak. So she goes like, ee! You know, so she can get to the Allison register. And
covers her forehead because she doesn't have bangs, and right. Allison does. And so, and she opens the door, and it's Nurse Ratched, mm-hmm. who's coming and is like, you gotta hurry, you gotta go.
Right.
Like, and poor Sarah is just like, and it definitely, this is when it started really playing off of the house party from season one,
yes.
because Sarah has to try and pretend to be Allison.
Right.
And, oh, gosh.
That was very funny.
Those two pretending to be each other are one of my favorite, like, twin hiding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Combinations.
Well, yeah. And so after Sarah leaves, Allison comes back into the room, and she's like, what is going on here? And Felix is like, you're welcome. Thanks to me, he's going to miss his meeting with DeAngelis. And Allison's like, he can't be here. There are tours. They're coming to the room after the assembly. And Felix, oh, bollocks. So, as you say, he thought he was doing a smart thing, but he didn't think it totally through. So, meantime, at the assembly, Sarah / Allison is coming into the room, and she's, like, trying to find a little seat out of the way. She's just going to sit there and watch stuff and be, you know, keep to herself, not screw anything up. And the manager of the rehab says, like, and the group has chosen a resident to make some opening remarks. Ladies and gentlemen, Allison Hendricks. It's like, well, of course. And Allison's like, oh, crap. And she has to make something up on the fly. And she may not know anything about rehab, but she knows a lot of words that have to do with drugs, I was thinking. So she's like, thanks. You know, yes. We stand among you, pill poppers, booze hounds, hop heads, tweakers, rummies. And the manager's shaking her head like, Allison, nope. And so then...
That's not right. Yeah,
and meanwhile, Allison and Felix are carrying Vic out of the room, and Allison's saying, hurry up, I've got to make it to the assembly for role playing. And we're like, role playing? So now they cut to Donnie is up in front of the assembly with Allison, and they are going to role play, which Sarah doesn't really know what to do. She's not sure, but Donnie sure does. And he stands up and he sort of pulls himself up, all shoulders back like Allison, and puts his hand on his chest and says, like, don't stammer, stand up straight or I'll withhold affection. And it's a great scene. And Donnie is great in this, you have to admit. And
oh yeah, absolutely. And I really liked the line where Sarah finally understands like what this role playing is and goes, oh, he's being Allison and I'm being Allison being Donnie. Like she had to process through, because now she is Sarah being right. Allison being Donnie, and has to like add these layers into her performance that she wasn't expecting to have to do in the first place. And yeah, it's, oh
yeah, it's very layered now.
Hilarious. And yeah,
because Tatiana playing Sarah, playing Allison, playing Donnie,
and she's seeing Felix carrying Vic, and Sarah is like, I really have to tinkle.
Yes,
like she has to get out of there, and she's got to talk to Allison, find out what the heck went on.
Yep.
Because obviously this is not what anyone wants.
No, and I like that line. That was true Allison mode. I really have to tinkle.
Yes.
Yeah, so back in Allison's room, Sarah is there, and she has the headband on, and Allison comes in. She's mad, like, what do you think you're doing? And she's... tries to grab back her headband, and Sarah's like, oh, piss off. And they're about to have, you know, an argument about how this all went down when the door opens and there's Donnie. And he sees Sarah there plus Allison. And he's at that moment like the textbook definition of dumbfounded. He can't even speak.
Yes.
But Allison doesn't know that he doesn't know about the clones. Because she just assumes, since he's been working with Dr. Leakey, he's part of the whole conspiracy. And so she's being all like, relax, Donnie, it's Sarah Manning, the runaway clone. You probably want to go call Dr. Leakey now. And Sarah says, I don't think he knows. And Felix is like, that kind of cluelessness can't be faked. So that was a revelation, I think, even to the audience, that Donnie didn't know about the clones.
We expected him to know at least something.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he pretty much knew nothing. And then as the scene goes on, we learn that he knew next, like, a whole lot of nothing, because, like, he was recruited from a sociology class.
Yeah, in college. Like,
and he didn't know about the probing. He didn't know about any of the stuff. Like, he really was, I mean, he's her monitor, but in a way that is the only way he really could have been, because mm-hmm. he obviously doesn't have the skills that Paul had.
Right.
I mean, this is very, very obvious, which is also why in the first season, when we're like, oh, it must be Ainsley, because there's no way Donnie could be her monitor. Well, we found out why.
Yeah.
Because he had no clue what was really going on.
That's the only way he could be the monitor, yep. is to be actually more clueless than the subject herself.
Right. Yes,
so,
it's very true.
Yeah, so then it gets just this really heart-wrenching speech by Allison, because, you know, he said, oh, they told us it was benign, but the subjects had to remain unaware. And so Allison's like, but, you know, men came into the house and with probes and medical tests, like, was that benign? And Donnie, you know, he's starting to argue with her, and she says, you destroyed us with the spying and the lies. I loved you so much, and you ruined our family. And you're so stupid, you don't even know why. And, whoa, you know, and she storms out the room. I love that. You know, that was a great Allison moment.
Yeah, and you see Donnie and the change in his face.
Yes.
I mean, we talk about Tatiana's acting, and it's phenomenal. But everyone else is so good, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Donnie has this, like, heartbroken, stricken face, and then it morphs into he is pissed. This
right.
anger.
I noticed that, too.
The level of anger that he has. And I'm just like,
wow.
Oh, no, poor, what I thought at the time was poor Allison. But that's not who he's pissed
right.
at.
Yeah, no, it is. It's a very striking couple of seconds, you know, from horrified and sad to stone-faced kind of mad, you know, cold, white, hot anger. Is that a thing?
Yeah.
I just said cold, hot anger. Whatever.
Yes.
Whatever.
It's a thing now.
It is now.
We've said it, so.
Yeah, so. And this leads us to the final scene of this episode. So we've already had Rachel setting Leaky up for being assassinated. And he's on the street. He's trying to decide what to do with his 30-minute head start that she's given him. And a car was following Leaky, and it turns out it's Donnie in the car. And Leaky's trying to get a cab, but Donnie pulls up and says, like, hey, Professor Leaky, I need to have a word. And Leaky laughs at him, which I was like, yeah, I wouldn't be laughing right now.
That's not. Of course Dr. Leaky laughed. Of course he laughed. Here's Donnie, who's a complete doofus, which we've seen any time that they've had their interactions. You know that Leaky thinks he's an idiot. You know this. And so, of course, he laughed until Donnie pulls out a gun.
Yeah.
And he's not laughing anymore. And Donnie is just furious. You came into my house and probed my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And Leaky goes, listen to me, you turnip. Which I thought it was such a good insult. Not a smart thing to say to someone with a gun.
Right.
But still really funny.
Yeah.
Really funny. And Donnie just, like, I quit, and, like, bangs his hands on the wheel, which still had the gun in his hand, and he ends up shooting Leaky right in the head, and I was so surprised, did not see that coming at all. And then Donnie's face, like, he didn't want to shoot Leaky. Like, he didn't actually.
Yeah.
He was one of the people that was will use the gun as a threat, but did not actually want to shoot anybody. And oh my gosh, his face covered with brains and guts yeah. and whatnot. And he's just like, oh no, what have I done?
Yeah. There's so much prop blood and brains in this car at this point that it doesn't even gross me out because it's so much. It's like,
yeah,
I can totally picture them, like how they set that scene up, because obviously they would have to have the before the shooting and then do all the special effects of the, you know, makeup and prop blood and everything, and then have yeah. after the shooting. Anyway,
I am sure that the set dressers had a blast spreading that all over the place. Like, let's just fill it up.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, it was so funny.
Yeah, it was intense. I figured that that would surprise you. I can't imagine anybody.
Yes.
Actually predicting that that is how it was going to end.
Right. No, you don't. Like, that's not how that's going to happen.
I mean, if you were going to predict anything, it would be that Leaky gets the gun from him and kills him, takes his car.
Right. That's totally what I was thinking. It was like, oh, okay, Leaky's going to grab the gun because, of course, he knows how to disarm somebody. And Donnie is going to chicken out and run out of the car. And Leaky has a car and is now going to get away. And Leaky will be back for something bad because yeah. he's not going to take this lying down, yeah. basically. And
it was a huge surprise. I remember the first time I watched it and I was like, really? Because he's such a major character. And he's very dead. I think there's no taking him to the hospital at this point.
No, he's that much gore that, yeah, he's done. Yeah. Even in any other show that has fantastic, like, medical stuff, uh-huh. he's dead.
Yeah.
Like, zombies, he's dead. Vampires, he's dead. Any of that.
Star Trek, he's dead. He's dead.
Yes.
He was in an episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation, too. Just circling back to one of my other obsessions, but nothing has obsessed me as much as Orphan Black and watching it with you, because we have such a good time watching this. And I hope that you are still very much entertained and we keep going to next week. We've got three more episodes.
Absolutely.
Three more episodes in this season. I can hardly wait. But I will.
Oh, my goodness. I'm just very excited that there are three more seasons after this. Because, yeah. like, and I'm hoping that it wraps up neatly. Because
yeah.
I think that will help.
Yeah. Because they knew they were going to have five seasons, that was from the outset.
Yeah.
It's more coherent than I think shows that get canceled in the middle.
Yes. No, that makes a huge difference.
But that's all I'm going to say, because I need you to keep going forward, because we totally need to watch season five together.
Yes.
As well as four, as well as three. So, Kathy, why don't you let people know where they can find us, and we'll call it a wrap.
Absolutely. So you can find us online. We are all on Twitter. The show is at SestraCast. I am at Mrs. Soup, and Jean is at Mac Genie with a G. We are a proud member of the Incomparable Network, and so you can find us at sestercast.com, which will link you over to all of our past episodes if you missed any. And feel free to reach out to us on Twitter. Let us know what you think about Love Actually, yeah. maybe, as long as it's not hate.
Yeah.
But also what you thought about this episode, and if any of this twists and turns surprised you as much as they did me.